Hello, everyone. Welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. What turns out to have been maybe one of your favorite debates of all time. And when I say one of your favorite debates, I mean you were one of the people debating. You weren't just, you know, standing by watching, listen to a couple other people debate or four or five other people debate. You were involved in the debate. What was the subject? What was it about? What were you debating with the other person or the other people? And what made that your favorite debate? What was it about that one that just stands out in your mind as a really, really special debate that just warms your heart, has a special place in your memory bank? That debate. Do you generally enjoy debating, or do you prefer to avoid debates like the plague? For those of you who enjoy a good debate, what kind of strategies do you use? And what is it about the debate that really just draws you? I mean, from one debate to the next, you're drawn into a debate. I know for some people, it's going to be because they just like, I mean, they really enjoy matching wits with someone else. And it's not an ugly thing. They just enjoy seeing if the other person can outthink them, if they can outthink the other person, and whoever wins is fine. For some people, it is a matter of pride. I mean, they're really, really proud and arrogant. And they want to just show that they can out-debate someone else. And they're not interested in getting to the truth of the matter. They just want to out-debate. And they lack any real skill at it. What I'm talking about is a person who enters into a debate. They want to show everybody around how skillful they are at shutting the other folks down, no matter what. And so they'll go ahead and enter the debate. You all agree on what the topic is. And as soon as the other person begins to make points that make it clear that they're about to show that the other person didn't know what they were talking about, and they're about to shut that person down, the person who is full of arrogance and haughtiness will start to interrupt, and they'll overtalk the other person. They'll get real loud and talk a lot faster than the other person so that nobody can hear what the other person is saying. The other person will finally try to get a word in edgewise, and the other one will start over-talking them again. They'll get real loud and they'll talk real fast, and they're not saying anything worth anything. But they make sure that other person cannot get their point out. And in exasperation, the other person just gives up. And the people standing around don't have the wherewithal to realize what just happened. The one who talked real fast and loud didn't say anything worth listening to. He just wouldn't give the other person or the other people the opportunity to make their points. That, to me, is the most unskillful debater, because they have nothing working for them. But then you have debaters who have hearts filled with hatred, and they have dark agendas related to that hatred. And they want to make sure that they go about the business of debating, debating, debating for the purpose of furthering their agenda. And very often, not always now, but very often, those people have very little to no interest in truth either. Well, that just kind of gives us a segue into something I want you to hear, shared on Seeker.com, about, well, whether you want to call them debates, you'd rather call them arguments. Sometimes they really are arguments. Sometimes they really are debates. I remember even in high school, I would watch some of my friends get into debates. And I mean, those debates would get, just fired up, but they'd be laughing, while they talked. I mean, they were some great debates. And they'd laugh at their own point. They laugh at the other person's point. They would just debate. And I get a kick out of it. It was great. They were, and believe me now, don't get me wrong. Whatever side they were arguing, they truly believed. But it wasn't a life or death situation for anybody. They just debated, partly because they wanted to argue their point, but also just the sheer fun of it. Well, let's hear what they have to say about this whole notion of arguing, debating, whichever word you want to use. Basically, it comes down to convincing someone that you're right.
About ideology seem to be like a lame snowball fight with people lobbing tweets, insults, and MS Paint memes at each other. And you're probably wondering, there has to be a better way. And neuroscience says there just might be. Theme song time.
No theme song.
We're just going to do this next paragraph then.
All right, that's good.
Let's use the 1996 original motion picture Space Jam as an example. Now, if you don't like Space Jam, well, yeah, of course I'm going to give you the hands because that movie's fire and you suck for not believing what I believe. If I want you to believe what I believe, I have to find a better way than that to influence you, and there have been studies done to find the most effective way to persuade people. Have you ever gotten into a fight on Facebook, brought up a source, and someone still refused to change their mind? Well, a 1979 study had participants with strong opinions on the death penalty, both for or against, look at two articles, one backing up their point of view, the other contradicting it. And the study found that participants only agreed with the study that supported their stance, further polarizing the groups. We call this a confirmation bias. Basically, we only want to believe facts that help prove that we're right. So if you think Space Jam is trash, which you absolutely shouldn't, and I just throw articles about the cultural impact, I mean, the amazing soundtrack and how hard it is to act on green screen with people who aren't Bugs Bunny, then I probably won't change your mind. But why are we like this? Well, some researchers think it's because humans developed a reasoning mechanism, not to get to the truth, but just to convince people that we're right because being wrong feels like failure, and everyone prefers that victory of being right. But there might be a way to combat this. Many people get emotionally invested in fights on the internet at Thanksgiving, on the internet at Thanksgiving, and sometimes, most times, it doesn't work out. Emotion is a powerful tool to change another person's mind, but how? A Princeton MRI study found that when a group of people listened to a powerful political speech, their brains ticked together. There was a synchronization effect, which makes sense because everyone's attention was on it, but what was synchronizing? Their emotions. A 2004 study found further evidence when they had subjects watch 30 minutes of a movie and their brains synced up at the most emotional beats in the movie. Humans respond to emotional stimuli, so using emotions to drive a point home is important. Our brain structures, functions, and expression are similar, so responsibly sharing my feelings on Space Jam while Evanescence is My Immortal, a banger, plays in the background might work. Positive and constructive ways to persuade people to your point of view are much easier, especially when you try to find common ground. All right, so common ground and emotional appeal aren't working. Give up, right? I would. Not exactly. Say you really care about an issue, particularly one with social relevance. Human instincts to take to the streets and hope people really care about your issue, and it's frustrating when they don't, right? Well, it's all about framing. In Tyler Sherrod's book, The Influential Mind, she uses the example of airline safety videos. The video says, y'all better chill before this plane crashes. Well, that's dark and bleak, and people wouldn't respond well to that. And that's why pre-flight safety videos are much more lit now with breakdancers, rappers, whatever else will elicit a more positive feeling while delivering the same message. In a politically polarized time, it's easy to sit back on what we believe and not engage with other points of view. But I just want people to remember that our brains are very similar to each other's, and we all respond to how information is packaged. Now, I'm not saying engage with racist, sexist, homophobes, Nickelback apologists on the internet, and don't engage with people who make you feel like you're arguing for your right to exist and your humanity. I'm just saying that while we're hoping for progress, we should think about how we frame information. We have a degree of mental elasticity, and the brain has space for change if we allow it to. Remember, we're not going to win every argument. Sometimes rhyme and reason doesn't sway someone, so it's Gucci if you're like, yeah, not today, and take care of yourself. Might I suggest curling up with some popcorn, maybe like a chamomile tea, enjoy a delightful romp starring Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny, perhaps? Yo, here at Seeker, we share stories about science, technology, engineering, and math every day. You know what you're about. You know why you're here. So make sure you come back for more videos. We're making them for you.
So what do you think about that, ladies and gentlemen? The power of emotion to influence our decisions, possibly. Well, I think I kind of consider this an emotional appeal. As we know, Brett Kavanaugh is up for he has been nominated to become the next Supreme Court Justice. And one of the points that President Trump is making now about the fact that there has been no approval process, you know, because people are saying, hey, look, we need to look into these allegations. He's been accused by three different women of sexual misconduct. And now we're hearing that there may have been something going on with regards to his social life when it comes to drinking and whether or not he may have lied under oath while talking about his drinking habits. And specifically, whether or not he may have passed out drunk at some point and lied about it. Well, you have quite a few people who are saying, look, we need to handle the Brett Kavanaugh case the same way we would handle any other case and have handled any other cases in the past where someone was being nominated for a particular position, including Justice of the Supreme Court, and it was determined a thorough investigation needed to be conducted. I think that the allegations are serious enough that FBI investigation should be conducted, a thorough one that takes as long as it takes, rather than rushing them through the process, saying we want it done within 1 week. Let them carry out their investigation, interview as many people as they need to interview, follow as many facts as they need to follow to make this as thorough as possible. It's not the practice to rush the FBI and say, look, we want this investigation done in 1 week's time. That's not the practice, though. Let's not try to set precedents now. But this is what President Trump said that I find particularly interesting. And it's something that can really, it can have an impact on people's emotions. He talked about the fairness factor. And the fact that Brett Kavanaugh is not being approved right away, not being voted on, approved of right away, but instead the process is one that's taking some time. President Trump says this is not fair to him and it's not fair to his family. Now, we understand that ultimately the Republicans, including our Republican president, want this over with quickly so that they don't run the risk of having the Democrats become the majority in the House or the Senate in the November elections. And President Trump not be able to get his pick in the Supreme Court, on the Supreme Court. We know that that's ultimately what that's about. They don't want to have President Trump in a situation that former President Obama was in, when President Obama had nominated his choice for the Supreme Court justice, and the Republicans made it clear to him they were not even going to entertain the thought of that man being voted in as the next Supreme Court justice. And for 10 months, they would not even, they did just what they said they would do. They essentially stonewalled President Obama, the President of the United States of America, and they just stonewalled him. Now, here's the reason that I'm bringing that up. Was that fair? 10 months. Because they wanted to, they were hoping that the Republicans in the House and the Senate were hoping that they would get a Republican president to win the November election. And that president, that Republican president, would have the opportunity to appoint, to nominate a Supreme Court justice. Was that fair to that nominee, Merrick Garland, and his family? the Republican president is talking about how this is unfair. And we're talking in this case about something that needs to be done. We're talking about an investigation that is truly necessary because of the allegations that have been brought against this nominee. In Merrick Garland's case, there were no allegations brought up that even justified saying, nope, we're not going to have a vote on this nominee. It was purely political. And so I understand the whole issue of, you know, President Trump saying this is not fair to his nominee or to the nominee's family. But is it truly unfair in light of the fact that an investigation is necessary? I would say it would be unfair if it were purely political. Purely political, only political, as was the case with the Republicans refusing to take a vote on Merrick Garland. That was purely political. That was all about trying to improve their chances of getting someone on the Supreme Court whose ideology matched theirs. And for 10 months, they made no moves whatsoever. There was no talk on the Republican part about a need for investigation of Merrick Garland because there were no allegations brought against him that even gave anyone the slightest hint of an idea that in any kind of investigation was necessary. It was purely political. In this case, this is not purely political. We all know, even though some people may not be willing to admit it, we all know that an investigation is warranted, justified, needed in the case of the current nominee. Several allegations of sexual misconduct, possibly having lied under oath. And so, while I understand the charge of unfairness, I disagree with that. I strongly disagree with that charge. No one is being unfair because no one is trying to take steps that are totally uncalled for. That would be unfair. I got to tell you, although I'm a person who you all can tell, I strongly support the promotion of justice and equality. And from all that I've heard and read, the current nominee for the justice for the Supreme Court is not there. But I would say, and this is the way, this is my position. If there were no allegations brought against him and all anyone could do is come up with some delay tactics simply because they would be hoping that the Democrats would be hoping to get enough people to take the House and or Senate so that they could impact the decision on who goes into the Supreme Court, I would understand that, but I would say that's wrong to just delay this unnecessarily. But when you have justifiable reasons for calling for an investigation, that investigation needs to go forward, and there needs to be no more rushing to try to get it finished as quickly as possible. That's wrong. I wasn't excited about President Trump's pick for the Supreme Court justice because, again, I do care about justice. I do care about equality. I do care about income equality. I do care about women receiving full pay for doing the same work that men do. Those issues mean a lot to me. I do care about taking care of proper care of the oppressed, the poor, the needy, etc. And from all indications, the Supreme Court nominee is in a different camp. I definitely prefer someone in there who will fight for the voting rights of all Americans. And based on what we've heard and read, the current nominee seems to be in a different camp. I wasn't saying much because even though I preferred someone with a different ideology, and folks, just be honest, everybody wants someone with a particular ideology. And the folks who say they're not looking for that are just being dishonest. I really wanted someone who has the ideology that they're going to be looking out for the poor. And what I found is we can look out for the poor and the needy and take good care of the wealthy at the exact same time. That was proven in the 90s, as I've said a number of times, when President Clinton was in the White House. The poor, the oppressed, the needy did much better in life, but so did the wealthy. The wealthy also did much better in life, financially, etc. But I couldn't, in clear conscience, say, hey, look, just delay this as long as you can without any justification for doing it. I couldn't bring myself to say that. And I wish more people were like that. But once we began to hear allegations of sexual misconduct, and now three people, I asked the question a while back, we have one allegation now, will there be a second and a third? And now, lo and behold, we do have a second and a third. Will there be a fourth and a fifth? We definitely have three allegations of sexual misconduct and possibly having lied under oath about his drinking. An investigation is warranted, and an investigation that needs to be as thorough as it needs to be, and for that reason needs to take as long as it takes to make the investigation thorough. I know that a lot of folks who are looking at this from a purely political standpoint don't want to hear that. They don't want to engage that. That is what my position would be if the person nominated were independent or a Democrat. Because I really believe in wearing my American hat when these issues come up. That's why it's so easy for me to ask everyone else to wear the American hat and not the party hat. What is truly right? All right. More speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. when we come back. And when we come back, I want you to begin to explore something with me. We all experience pain of some kind or another, emotional pain, physical pain. Is it possible that someone you have never met can help relieve your pain?